Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Hello, it's that time of year again to welcome you to Stephen Ritson in Pieces. This is where I offer you not so much a rundown of 2021, but a random collection of things that struck me over the past year. Some of it will be familiar. Some will merely be the result of me awaking from a dream and frantically scribbling it down so I can share it with you before it's taken hostage by the goddess Amnesia. It's not comprehensive, perhaps not even comprehensible, but it is my postcard to you.
Oh, fromage de Nazareth, quesos de Nazareth. We haven't even got to January and you've gone and broken the program.
All right, no problem. Calm down, it wasn't in strictly chronological order anyway.
Where's January? Do we start with January?
I need to make sure your intro's in the right order.
No. No.
Forget it. Just stay out of the way and let the protagonists do the talking.
Well, it is called Stephen Ritson in Pieces for a reason.
And here we go. Nine.
We look forward to the start of a new year, fresh with hope and possibilities for better days to come.
Happy New Year! We made it!
To say this past year was full of challenges is putting it mildly.
Good riddance to 2020.
It was the worst year ever.
Goodbye! Goodbye. Na, na,
na. We're all wishing for a better 2021.
2021 is going to be better, and help is on its way.
We finally have a vaccine. We finally have some good news.
Get the vaccine and move forward to a 2021 where we don't have to wear masks and we can all be safe and start to return to a normal life.
Schools, theaters, sports events, restaurants. We will be there by the early fall.
Well, I think that the vaccines have made an absolutely massive difference, and now we also have antiviral medicines coming along. We've definitely got the armamentarium we need to tackle this now. Keeping immunity high is really, really important. It's not gone across the world. It's still very high levels in all sorts of places. We have high levels in the UK, but we are much more protected against it, and that is the key thing.
On a bitterly cold Christmas night in 1776... George Washington led his troops across the Delaware. The men he led had faced defeat after defeat at the hands of the British. The picture for America's future was as grim and cold as the winter landscape. But it was that night that turned the tide of history. It was that night that led to the first of the victories that liberated America. The 5,400 troops who crossed with Washington that night were heroes who forged a nation. That night wasn't the final victory for freedom, but it taught Americans a lesson in the power of courage, of perseverance, of facing the longest of odds and never backing down. We will never know all their names or how all their stories ended. But the legacy of those heroes still flows through the souls of Americans, as it has in every generation. The courage of their fight is now called upon to inspire strength for battles of our time.
The vaccine is one of the greatest achievements of mankind. We would have had a 1917, remember the Spanish flu, killed perhaps 100 million people. Actually, it ended the First World War because the soldiers were so... A lot of people don't know that. The soldiers got so sick. It was a terrible thing. There were no vaccines. There were no anything. I came up with a vaccine, with three vaccines. All are very, very good. Came up with three of them in less than 9 months. It was supposed to take 5 to 12 years.
And yet, more people have died under COVID this year, by the way, yeah, under Joe Biden.
That's right.
Than under you, and more people took the vaccine this year. So people are questioning how...
Well, no, the vaccine worked, but yeah, some people aren't taking it. The ones that get very sick and go to the hospital are the ones that don't take the vaccine. But it's still their choice. And if you take the vaccine, you're protected. look, the results of the vaccine are very good. And if you do get it, it's a very minor form. People aren't dying when they take the vaccine.
Thank you.
We're not stupid.
Yeah, we're not.
Donald Trump is a genius. That's what the J stands for.
Finally, there's some good news on the COVID front. Even though new cases are still at an appallingly high level, in the past 7 days, new cases were reported at their lowest rate since early November.
Well, hey, it's me. I'm finally going to get my vaccine. I'm so excited.
Between Moderna and Pfizer, the U.S. has been able to distribute more than 90 million vaccine doses coast to coast.
I'm officially vaccinated.
I'm so excited.
Oh, it was almost surreal. Like, I kept shaking because I was so excited.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate.
This girl is on Pfizer.
I would imagine, and in fact, I'm fairly certain, that as we get into and towards the end of April, that will be what I would call open season, namely virtually everybody and anybody in any category could start to get vaccinated.
More people will get vaccinated, the faster we're going to overcome this virus and get back to our loved ones, get our economy back on track, and start to move back to normal.
None of us are safe anywhere until everybody's vaccinated everywhere. And you just need to look at the figures. The World Health Organization said this week that we have had 5 million deaths, and there will be another 5 million deaths if we don't vaccinate. They've said that there has been 245 million cases around the world, and there's going to be another 200 million. So people think here that we're near the end of this. We're actually possibly only just over halfway through this. And unless we get vaccines to the countries that don't have them at the moment, then the disease will spread, it will mutate. We may think it's not going to hit us, but it will come back in new variants, and it will hit even the fully vaccinated in Britain. So we've got to do something about vaccination for all. We can distribute these vaccines that are available to all parts of the world. It's an issue of coordination. There will be 12 billion vaccines had been produced by the end of the year, enough to vaccinate the whole world, but we don't have them in the right places. And I'm calling on the countries that have the vaccines and don't use them, and that's after boosters, and it's after vaccinating the young people. You've got extra vaccines because you've overordered. Get them to the countries that need them. Let's get the world vaccinated and let's feel safe. Otherwise, these vaccines are going to be wasted. They're going to pass their expiry date. It's just criminal to see vaccines wasted when they could save lives.
Pieces.
The nominees for Best Original COVID Treatment are ivermectin.
More people are becoming sick and then trying to use the horse deworming medication, ivermectin, as an at-home COVID-19 treatment.
Iodine.
Reports are suggesting people are now swallowing iodine as a means of treating the virus.
Bleach.
We've even seen people that have tried to inhale bleach because, you know, bleach is used to clean the surfaces.
Colloidal silver.
Others are claiming so-called silver solution or colloidal silver can cure coronavirus.
Contracting COVID.
According to a major new study out of Israel, this is interesting. Talk to your doctor about it. Natural immunity is much more powerful than vaccine immunity.
Oleandrin.
Mike Lindell is backing a new unproven potential treatment for the coronavirus, and he's got the president's ear on it. It's called oleandrin, and it's an extract from a plant, oleander, that can be highly dangerous, toxic, even fatal when consumed in even a small amount.
The nominees for Best Historical Adaptation are Tucker Carlson, Jim Crow.
Medical Jim Crow has come to America. If we still had water fountains, the unvaccinated would have separate ones.
Steve Hilton, apartheid.
Fauci wants mask apartheid in our schools.
Candace Owens, segregation.
We have an administration that is reintroducing segregation again in this country under the guise of medical safety.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, Nazi Germany.
You know, we can look back in a time in history where people were told to wear a gold star, and they were definitely treated like second-class citizens, so much so that they were put in trains and taken to gas chambers in Nazi Germany. And this is exactly the type of abuse that Nancy Pelosi is talking about.
Stephen Ritson in...
Barack Obama had a big part of 9/11.
Which part?
Not being around, always on vacation, never in the office.
Why do you think Barack Obama wasn't in the Oval Office on 9/11?
That I don't know. We'd like to get to the bottom of that. We don't even know if he's a citizen.
Yeah, if you don't look at the birth certificate, there's almost no evidence there.
Exactly.
So there's nothing Barack Obama could do to prove that he was born here.
If there was maybe witnesses that were attendants at his birth.
Like his mother? Would you listen to his mother?
No. She has motivation to lie.
So you don't trust Donald Trump's birth certificate either?
Yeah, because he's been here forever.
Well, how do you know? What's your proof?
Well, his parents and...
But they're biased. I'm talking about, like, people who could
Why
be in the
room. Why would they be biased?
Well, like, I'm just using your logic against you.
Okay.
On this historic week in Washington, one of the biggest stories was Bernie Sanders' mittens.
And here we go. Bernie Sanders' mittens.
By now, you've probably seen this picture of Senator Bernie Sanders.
We've all seen the memes.
Bundled up Bernie, the most notable meme of the 21st year of the 21st century.
You know, in Vermont, we know something about the cold. And we're not so concerned about good fashion. We want to keep warm.
Are you trying to say that as of January 20th, that President Trump will be president?
That depends on what happens on Wednesday.
President Trump won this election.
You think the election was stolen?
Absolutely.
At this point, we do not know who has prevailed in the election.
This fraud was systemic, and I dare say it was effective.
This is a contested election.
President Trump won by a landslide.
Hold him this way!
The outcome of our presidential election was seized from the hands of voters.
We have to make sure that they look into what has been the theft of this presidential election.
Joe Biden lost and President Trump won.
Whatever happens to President Trump, he is still the elected president.
I would love to see this election overturned.
No one believes that this guy got 80 million votes. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right.
No ragtime group of liberal activists will be allowed to steal this election.
The president wasn't defeated by huge numbers. In fact, he may not have been defeated at all.
Over the next 10 days, we get to see the ballots that are fraudulent. And if we're wrong, we will be made fools of.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state, and flipping the state is a great testament to our country.
With just a little over 2 weeks left in Donald Trump's presidency, the bombshells just keep dropping.
You should want to have an accurate election, and you're a Republican.
We believe that we do have an accurate election.
No, you don't.
President Trump, in a phone call, pushing the Georgia Secretary of State to find votes in order to overturn his verified loss in the November election.
Congress convenes Wednesday to certify the electoral vote, normally a formality. But President Trump's unsubstantiated claims of fraud leave some Republicans under pressure to question the results.
Good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, January the 6th.
President Trump is getting ready to speak with his supporters outside the White House. Hundreds of protesters have been on the streets of the Capitol ahead of today's Congressional Electoral College count.
Ladies and gentlemen, President Donald J. Trump!
Thank you. We have hundreds of thousands of people here, and I just want them to be recognized by the fake news media. Turn your cameras, please, and show what's really happening out here, because these people are not going to take it any longer. They're not going to take it any longer. We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them.
It's that direction.
We're watching live scenes out of Washington, D.C., very dramatic scenes.
Those are pictures of a group of Trump supporters outside Capitol Hill trying to get in.
They're going in.
They broke the glass in the United States Capitol, and now they are climbing through the window. This happened moments ago.
And it will stand in recess until the call of the chair.
Who, boss?
Protesters are in the building.
Thank you.
We're now hearing from reporters who are locked inside the Senate chamber that the protesters have breached the Senate chamber itself.
One person has been shot and has now died. The violence left five people dead.
We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
Madam Speaker, the Vice President and the United States Senate.
The votes for President of the United States are as follows. Joseph R. Biden, Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes. The announcement of the state of the vote by the President of the Senate shall be deemed a sufficient declaration of the persons elected President and Vice President of the United States, each for the term beginning on the 20th day of January, 2021. The chair declares the joint session dissolved.
Of course, we've hardly mentioned the fact the Democrats have taken control of the Senate thanks to two extraordinary wins in Georgia. And
Democrats will now control the Senate with Vice President-elect Kamala Harris casting tie-breaking votes.
We've just witnessed a truly solemn moment in American history. The House of Representatives has reached the threshold for making Donald J. Trump the only president of the United States to be impeached for a second time.
The House has impeached President Trump. The charge, incitement of insurrection.
This morning, President Trump's social media has been silenced. Twitter making the unprecedented move to ban him permanently, following similar bans by Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, and Twitch.
America now has a new administration in the White House, and tonight our commander-in-chief is calling for unity as he begins his term on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
This is America's day. This is democracy's day, a day of history and hope, of renewal and resolve. Through a crucible for the ages, America has been tested anew, and America has risen to the challenge.
I solemnly swear
that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
The duties of the office.
Kamala Harris's name now etched in history.
Becoming the first female, first Black American, and first South Asian American sworn in as vice president.
The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
Today, we celebrate the triumph not of a candidate, but of a cause, the cause of democracy.
Any response to the revelations that that GOP lawmakers were texting Chief of Staff Meadows, along with prominent Fox News host, ahead of the during the January 6th riots.
Well, it's disappointing and unfortunately not surprising that some of the very same individuals who were willing to warn, condemn, and express horror over what happened on January 6th were totally silent in public, or even worse, were spreading lies and conspiracy theories and continue to since that time. So disappointing, not surprising. Unfortunately, we've seen a trend from some of the same individuals.
While some desperately want to rewrite history and sweep the events of January 6th under the rug, the District of Columbia and its residents have chosen to speak truth through this filing, through this complaint, through this case. It is for these reasons that the independent office of Attorney General for the District of Columbia is filing the first civil lawsuit by a state or municipal government to hold accountable the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and more than 30 of their leaders and members for conspiring to terrorize the District of Columbia, for unlawfully interfering with our country's peaceful transition of power, and for assaulting our men and women in blue who valiantly defended the Capitol, the district, and our freedoms.
This vote on contempt today relates principally to Mr. Meadows' refusal to testify about text messages and other communications that he admits are not privileged. Members of Congress, the press, and others wrote to Mark Meadows as the attack was underway. One text Mr. Meadows received said, quote, "We are under siege here at the Capitol." Another, quote, "They have breached the Capitol." In a third, "Mark, protesters are literally storming the Capitol, breaking windows on doors, rushing in. Is Trump going to say something?" A fourth, "There's an armed standoff at the House chamber door." And another from someone inside the Capitol, "We are all helpless." Dozens of texts, including from Trump administration officials, urged immediate action by the president. Quote, "POTUS has to come out firmly and tell the protesters to dissipate. Someone is going to get killed." In another, "Mark, he needs to stop this now." A third, in all caps, "Tell them to go home." A fourth, and I quote, "POTUS needs to calm this shit down." These non-privileged texts are further evidence of President Trump's supreme dereliction of duty during those 187 minutes. And Mr. Meadows' testimony will bear on another key question before this committee. Did Donald Trump, through action or inaction, corruptly seek to obstruct or impede Congress's official proceedings to count electoral votes? Mark Meadows' testimony is necessary to inform our legislative judgments. Yet he has refused to give any testimony at all, even regarding non-privileged topics. He is in contempt of Congress.
Yes, you've got this ridiculous teenager from Sweden saying we're all going to die. No wonder they're gluing themselves to the roads.
Stephen Ritson, in pieces.
So breaking news tonight on the deepening crisis in Texas. Millions of residents are without power after a winter storm crippled the state's power facilities.
We currently are on 24 hours with no power or water. We're
moved to Texas, they said. It's so hot, they said.
Yeah, what about all this?
frozen water pipes bursting, destroying homes, some causing ceilings to collapse.
Guys, so this is my house. I don't know what to do. Everything's flooded.
We've explored many dozens of worlds, if you include the moons. Those other worlds represent alternative pathways in the evolution of Earth-like planets. They are cautionary tales about what can go wrong. There's another way in which spacecraft have enhanced our appreciation of this world, and that is they have provided the first pictures of the whole Earth. And what we saw was a small, beautiful, blue and white, jewel-like world set against the velvet backdrop of space. And you look at those pictures and the thought arises that this is a fragile and vulnerable place. And if you look closely, you can see on the daylit hemisphere a kind of a corona, a kind of aura of blue. And that's just the scattering of sunlight off the atmosphere. And what is so striking about it is how thin it seems. Indeed, the thickness of the Earth's atmosphere compared to the diameter of the Earth is about the same as the thickness of the coat of shellac on a school globe compared to the diameter of the globe. There's hardly any air there. Today, there are 5.3 billion of us. Our technology has reached formidable, indeed even awesome, proportions. And today, we are fully able to make catastrophic changes in the environment that sustains us. Not only on purpose, but also inadvertently, accidentally. If we don't watch what we're doing, we can make great troubles for ourselves. The planet Venus is a clear example of the extremes to which an Earth-like planet can be taken by having too much of the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The surface of Venus is at a temperature of 900 degrees Fahrenheit, hotter than the hottest household oven, hot enough to melt tin. Lead. The world, like the Earth, can be driven to such a disastrous, inclement climate by the greenhouse effect. To take appropriate countervailing action, we must understand science and technology. It's essential, especially the 535 members of the House of Representatives and the Senate. Something like three of them have any background in science. If a CO2 molecule or a CFC molecule is put into the atmosphere over one country, it is carried over other countries. No one nation can solve this problem. This is a global problem. These are trans-ideological, trans-national, and trans-generational issues. We are all of us, this generation and future generations, and everybody on Earth, in this together. Don't sit this issue out. You have an opportunity more than most other generations to make a difference, to make a world worthy of you, of the generations of your ancestors who worked to put you here, and a world worthy of our and your children and grandchildren. The Voyager 1 and 2 spacecraft have now left the planetary part of the solar system. It's an astonishing accomplishment. Machines of the human species speeding out past the planets into the dark of interstellar space. We have accomplished that. And As Voyager 1 left the realm of the planets, we were able to get it to turn around and to photograph the solar system from which it had come. It's a portrait of where we are. The Earth is there. You have to look close. It's a dot. That blue dot is worth cherishing because it is the only home we have.
There is no planet B. Our hopes and dreams drown in their empty words and promises.
The United Nations Climate Change Conference has opened in Glasgow, Scotland. Known as COP26, the summit brings world leaders together to negotiate a way to avoid catastrophic climate change.
Deep divisions remained on key issues like unprecedented language on fossil fuels and how much money developed countries should contribute to adapt to the climate crisis.
I would like to remind us all that we have 98 months to halve global emissions. The difference between 1.5 and 2 degrees is a death sentence.
This girl.
I just say to all delegates, I apologize for the way this process has unfolded, and I'm deeply sorry. I also understand the deep disappointment. But I think, as you have noted, it's also vital that we protect this package.
Right now, a dangerous and unprecedented heat wave is baking the Pacific Northwest. Nearly 20 million people are under an excessive heat warning.
When you hear people talk about how hot it is in the Pacific Northwest right now, they ain't lying, dude. It's hot as balls.
Look at the numbers. 114 today in Portland, 107 in Seattle. Those will break the records for the hottest it's ever been in either of those cities ever.
The extreme heat fueling dozens of large fires as well.
Wildfire season in full force way too early.
It was scary. It was like, you know, one of those apocalyptic movies you see with fire and wind and people going everywhere.
So far, more than 2.7 million acres have burned this year, outpacing this time in 2020, the worst year ever recorded, by nearly a million acres.
Flames are tearing through the Greek island of Evia as temperatures hit nearly 113 degrees.
Germany is witnessing once-in-a-lifetime floods, the worst floods in 1,000 years.
The signs are all there. And today, the UN said it is already too late to stop some of the devastating impacts of climate change.
Thank you very much, Alok. And let me start by joining others in thanking you for all your efforts so that we can conclude this COP with ambitious conclusions that we can take home and then start to work what needs to be done. This morning, or an hour ago, my son Mark sent me a picture of my grandson, Case, who's 1 year old. I was thinking, Case will be 31 when we're in 2050. And it's quite a thought to understand that if we succeed, he'll be living in a world that's livable. He'll be living in an economy that is clean, with air that is clean, at peace with his environment. If we fail, and I mean fail now in the next couple of years, he will fight with other human beings for water and food. That's the stark reality we face. So 1.5 degrees is about avoiding a future for our children and grandchildren that is unlivable. I might not reach 2050, probably won't, But he will be there as a young man, and I want him to live peaceful, prosperous life like I wanted for everybody's children and grandchildren in this room. This is personal. This is not about politics. And I don't live in Palau. I don't live on Barbados. I don't live on the Marshall Islands. But there it's even far more personal because you're standing with your feet in the water. And this is what we need to address today. We need to make sure major emitters reduce their emissions so that we keep 1.5 alive. That needs to be at the heart of our conclusions today.
Those subsidies have to go. And we're the largest oil and gas producer in the world, and we have some of those subsidies. And President Biden has put in legislation to get rid of them. We are struggling each year to find money, but $2.5 trillion in the last 5 years, 6 years, went into subsidies for fossil fuel. That's a definition of insanity.
Stephen Ritson in pieces.
We're still fighting a global pandemic, but this will not go on forever. So what will the future look like post-COVID? Will it be fairer, more resilient, more sustainable? In Europe, we're used to thinking ahead, to coming up with ideas to build a better world for us and for our children. But for that, everybody has to play their part. Because Europe is every citizen. It is every company, large or small.
Payer un juste montant d'impôt n'est pas seulement une question de finances publiques, mais surtout une simple question d'équité.
This is why the European Commission is turning its pledge into action to make sure all multinational groups pay at least 15% corporate tax. Less than 3 months from a historic global agreement on corporate taxation, the Commission is honouring its promise to quickly implement minimum corporate taxation for all companies with either a parent or a subsidiary located in the EU. No loopholes, no workarounds. Just a reset, a seismic shift in the world of taxation. And we're not stopping here. We are also introducing further transparency measures so that no one can use shell companies to get out of paying taxes. For a society where everyone pays their fair share. For a Europe working towards recovery. Because the world has changed, so tax should too.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We can start prayers every morning, I think, and this I may propose as a formal resolution of the House with a celebration of Brexit. We should have the Brexit prayer and perhaps even the Brexit song beginning Gloria in Excelsis Deo, because it has been a triumph for this nation in reasserting its freedom. The NHS already had the £350 million on the side of the bus. That was delivered by my right honourable friend, the member for Maidenhead, in 2018, with an extra £34 billion uplift to the NHS by 2023-24. Just think of the vaccines that we have and the success of the vaccine rollout programme, and I believe I mentioned early in the happy fish that we have, Mr. Deputy Speaker. So there is general celebrating and rejoicing that we are now a free country once again.
When it all started, we had flags flying on the boats, oh, Brexit, we're going to be free, get our own waters back.
Did you have one of the flags?
Yeah, we had a flag. We got a brand new flag, put it up. I wouldn't even put it up now. I wouldn't even use it for a rag, what's happened to us.
And in most European countries, those in the passport-free Schengen area, you'll only be allowed to stay for 90 days in every 180-day period. Some British newspapers have been running articles about how unreasonable this is for people with second homes abroad, but the EU hasn't changed its rules. It's the UK that has chosen to diverge.
What was Mr. Johnson's phrase? Sandpapering the rough edges of the deal, loyally negotiated by his apparatchik, Lord Frost, a man who has made a speciality of reaching trade deals which produce less trade.
The writing's on the wall.
Well, in any event, we'll have to think of something to make the public think kindly towards administration because of the Europass.
Quite.
Europass?
Europass?
European Identity Card. Bernard, surely you've informed the Minister of...
Minister, didn't you do your boxes last night?
No, I was redrafting the redraft of the draft.
Well, briefly, Minister, Brussels is about to decree that there should be a new European identity card to be carried by all citizens of the EEC. Good. Now, the Foreign Office is quite ready to go along with it as a quid pro quo for a deal over the Battermount and the Wine Lake and the Milk Ocean. The Lamb War and the Cod Stink. And quite obviously, the Prime Minister wants you to introduce the legislation.
Me?
Yes, well, it's well known that you're pro-Europe, you see. And it would simplify our administration enormously in the long run, so it's a good idea, don't
good
you?
Good idea.
Good idea?
Good idea.
Not a good idea?
Political suicide. Trying to make British people carry compulsory identification papers. They'll say I'm introducing a police state again. Is this what we fought two world wars for, Humphrey?
Well, Minister, it's really little more than a sort of driving licence.
It's the last nail in my coffin, that's what it is.
Well, you might get away with calling it Euro Club Express.
Burn it by the shoulders again!
Why do we have to introduce it? Can't the Foreign Office do it?
Well, in fact, that was the Prime Minister's original suggestion, but the Foreign Secretary thought that this was a Home Office matter, and the Home Office took the view that it was essentially an administrative matter, and the Prime Minister agreed.
They're all playing pass the parcel.
Can you blame them when you can hear it ticking?
Well, I'm afraid that the identity card bill is planned to be the last action of this department.
Wonderful ammunition for the anti-Europeans.
Yes, don't the Foreign Office realise what damage this will do to the European idea?
Well, I'm sure they do. That's why they support it.
Well, surely the Foreign Office is pro-Europe, isn't it?
Yes and no. If you'll forgive the expression. The Foreign Office is pro-Europe because it is really anti-Europe. The civil service was united in its desire to make sure that the common market didn't work. That's why we went into it.
What are you talking about?
Minister, Britain has had the same foreign policy objective for at least the last 500 years, to create a disunited Europe. In that cause, we have fought with the Dutch against the Spanish, with the Germans against the French, with the French and Italians against the Germans, and with the French against the Germans and Italians. Divide and rule, you see. Why should we change now, when it's worked so well?
Ancient history, surely.
Yes, and current policy. We had to break the whole thing up, so we had to get inside. We tried to break it up from the outside, but that wouldn't work. Now that we're inside, we can make a complete pig's breakfast of the whole thing. Set the Germans against the French against the Italians against the Dutch. The Foreign Office is terribly pleased. It's just like old times.
Surely we're all committed to the European ideal.
Really, Minister?
If not, why are we pressing for an increase in the membership?
Well, for the same reason. It's just like the United Nations, in fact. The more members it has, the more arguments it can stir up, the more futile and impotent it becomes.
What appalling cynicism.
Yes. We call it diplomacy, Minister.
At this point in our Euro quiz, regulations require us to have a Call My Euro Bluff round. So, let's play Call My Euro Bluff. Ah, good evening and welcome. No, hush, Tish and Pibble. Who should we start? We'll start with David. David, give us some Euro regulation.
It's illegal to sell bananas if they're too curvy.
What do we think? Anyone got a theory about that?
I think that's true.
It's quite a well-known Euro regulation, straight bananas.
It's utter arse of the highest order.
So you're saying a bluff, are you? Well, what do you feel?
I seem to recall this is one of those things that the Daily Mail would suddenly go, how dare they say our bananas can't be bendy? Why, it's bendy bananas made this country what it is.
Yeah.
Balls.
Yeah, you say you think it's balls. Would you like to reveal them?
Balls.
It's a bluff.
It's just you just have to say how big they are, which is fair enough, because you know, otherwise fact, people are selling tiny pea-sized bananas.
And the clincher is the current EU standards are identical to the pre-existing British ones, and the United Nations ones and the OECD ones. I mean, it is, nothing has changed. Nothing is new except, as you say, the ability of the press to make things up and scare us that our bananas are going to be straightened. So, it's become rather political and rather exciting. Tara, what is yours?
OK, well, this actually is true. Trawler men will soon be required to wear hairnets whilst fishing.
Is this because they're handling food? And
it is it's exactly the point is to keep them clean right from the very start. So that's
convincing stuff. What do we feel?
Well, it makes practical sense as well, of course, because the hairnet could also maybe catch any smaller fish, like, you know, white bait or scampi that might get in the hair. And then you just at the end of the day, oh, there's another. That's dinner. Yeah,
they're used to handling nets. What are your thoughts?
Well, and then they wear hard hats now at Smithfield Market, and they never had to. They're always making people put things on their heads.
Good point. I know. I like that. Good. What do you feel, Phil?
Yes.
You think it's true as well? So most people think this is true. Come, demonstrate. Would tell us. Put us out of our misery. It's a bluff as well. It's not true. In fact, I quote Richard Littlejohn. He goes, oh, what a circus. The safety Nazis have forced fishermen to wear hairnets. You couldn't make it up. Well, actually, oddly enough, Richard, you could and you did.
It was actually wasn't even as if that Littlejohn didn't make that up.
No, he didn't, in fact.
It was made up by British journalists in a bar in Brussels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who tried to run to see, will people fall for this? Yeah. And the British press fell for it completely.
It's because they know that people love their little 5 minutes of snorting anger over the breakfast. Bloody people, why the God, it's so... Yes.
It's ridiculous. You don't take an active interest in how your country's run for just 45 years and look what happened.
Very good indeed. Absolutely right. So we've had two bluffs. Phil. I should do that, shouldn't I? Aha!
What did it wear, Stephen? What did it wear?
From January the 1st, 2008, circus tightrope walkers will be required to wear hard hats. It's because of an EEC regulation about safety in the workplace. Anybody, if their feet are more than 4 feet off the ground, have to wear a hard hat.
Well, I would believe that during performance, not, but during training, yes, bizarrely.
Yeah, that sounds convincing. What do you think of that?
I don't think... Well, if you fell off a tightrope, well, that would fall off your head. That would be hopeless.
Without a chin strap, it's actually an added hazard, isn't it?
Probably is. It could fall on top of someone.
Someone and hurt.
So what are you saying? Bluff? True?
Bluff.
I'm saying it's a bluff.
Reveal yourself, would you? Oh, it's also a bluff. The fact is, it is only true in the building and construction industry that you have to wear a hard hat at work.
Presumably for things where things come down on you rather than you going down on something else.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Good work. Lower there. Put a hat on when you're going down there.
It was reported in The Times, The Daily Telegraph, and surprisingly The Daily Mail, which is usually much more wise and thoughtful. That circus tightrope walkers are going to have to wear hard hats during their act. Mr. Archer, the circus general manager, added, this is just another loony law from Brussels, and we are the only country stupid enough to pay any attention. No, Mr. Archer, you're the only country stupid enough to believe it. Isn't that right? It's bizarre. Alan, have you got one?
Yes, I have. I have got one.
He's even got
these, you may think, are sausages.
I do.
But
bangers.
They are not to be sausages soon. They're going to be called emulsified high-fat offal tubes. That's what you have to have on the
label.
Because
that's what they contain.
And there is a sausage firm in Wales called Dragon Sausages, and they actually have to put on the label no dragon included.
What do we feel, team?
I think if you want a high-fat tube, I recommend the District Line between Bromley by Bow and Upton. But
No, I mean, there may be technically no. Of course, there'll be different names. And even different brands of sausages will have different names. No, of course not. It's just a scare.
I think I've heard this story's been around for a long time, and yet sausages are still called sausages.
Exactly. But is it true or is it false?
It is a bluff.
It is also a bluff. Oh. Very good.
And it's actually a line from Yes Minister.
There you are. Anthony Jane, Jonathan Lynn wrote. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen, from Eurobluff. No one wants to think about the year just gone. Now we all just want to get moving on, move on, move on. No one wants to hear about your gripes and your moans. We all just spent an era trapped in our homes. Move on, move on, move on. About PPE made by Tory donors that weren't fit for purpose. So we lost doctors and nurses that they didn't deserve this. Keep it all below the surface. Move on, just move on. Who cares?
says that there's a border in the Irish Sea. You only campaigned on the promise that there wouldn't be. Haven't the public had enough of public scrutiny? Move on. Never mind, they never made a working track and trace system. Just listen to the rags that hate and twist themselves into knots to lay that blame on people drowning in the channel where the water escaped. Move on, move on. Who cares if he were told we still have frictionless trade? Just think of all the money Jacob Rees-Mogg's hedge fund made. If you still get to keep your post and all your mates get paid, just move on, move on, move on.
Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain. Stephen Ritson in pieces.
I'm sure that they will be aware that there is no military path. There is no military path to victory for the Taliban.
Well, we've demonstrated that those people who said there's no military solution to the Afghan conflict are wrong. There is a military solution. We've just seen it, and the Taliban have won.
There is a light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Know them. Take them. He can't beat death, but he can beat death in life sometimes. And the more often you learn to do it, the more light there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you. There is enough treachery, hatred, violence, absurdity in the average human being to supply any given army on any given day. And the best at murder are those who preach against it. And the best at hate are those who preach love. And the best at war, finally, are those who preach peace. Those who preach God need God. Those who preach peace do not have peace. Those who preach peace do not have love. Beware the preachers, beware the knowers. Beware those who are always reading books. Beware those who either detest poverty or are proud of it. Beware those quick to praise, for they need praise in return. Beware those who are quick to censor, they are afraid of what they do not know. Beware those who seek constant crowds, for they are nothing alone. Beware the average man, the average woman. Beware their love. Their love is average, seeks average. But there is genius in their hatred. There is enough genius in their hatred to kill you, to kill anybody. Not wanting solitude, not understanding solitude, they will attempt to destroy anything that differs from their own. Not being able to create art, they will not understand art. They will consider their failure as creators only as a failure of the world. Not being able to love fully, they will believe your love incomplete, and then they will hate you, and their hatred will be perfect. Like a shining diamond, like a knife, like a mountain, like a tiger, like Hemlock. Their finest art.
The thing that we need to understand is that we had a very light presence on the ground, the US and UK. It's basically providing planes, air support to the Afghan army. But it was like the keystone of the arch. It was a small contribution, but without it, nothing could be held together. It's very difficult for an army like the Afghan army to fight without any air support. And what President Biden and Prime Minister Johnson and others have done is very cruelly remove, just a few weeks ago now, the vital thing that held the country together. And by doing so, have allowed the Taliban to capture almost the entire country now in a matter of days.
So is that then what should happen now, in your view, the reinstallation of that keystone, as you described it, that had maintained the situation in the last few years since the withdrawal of so many more troops?
I'm afraid it's too late now. I mean, as you say, for the last 5 years, we haven't had active combat operations there. It would have been very easy for President Biden and others to keep that in place. We've not been suffering casualties recently. So that was something that could have kept the country stable, could have allowed all the amazing progress that has been made to continue, but that's gone now. You were saying the Taliban might take over in a few weeks. I'm afraid they could take over in a few hours now. So we're gonna have to adjust to a horrifying situation in which a regime which, as you know, brutalized women, provided safe haven to Osama bin Laden, has a very aggressive attitude towards the West, we'll be taking over a country which for the last 20 years has had extraordinary opportunities to develop. When I saw it 20 years ago, it's one of the poorest places on earth. And I'm just thinking about millions of individual Afghans. And in my case, hundreds of Afghan friends whose lives have been transformed in the last 20 years who are now very, very frightened.
What should happen then now?
Well, it is now, I mean, two things. One of them is the West needs to take an extraordinarily long, hard look at itself. The way in which the US, Britain and others have behaved is so grossly and unbelievably irresponsible.
US defense officials say the last remaining American and NATO troops have left the Bagram military air base in Afghanistan and handed it over to Afghan forces.
Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?
No, it is not.
Why?
Because you have the Afghan troops have 300,000. Well-equipped as any army in the world and an air force against something like 75,000 Taliban. It is not inevitable.
With international forces largely gone, the Islamist group is taking more territory from a demoralized Afghan military.
But more than 100 districts are now in the Taliban's control.
Two major cities just collapsed. And it's so devastating to see that my country is just falling on her knees and no one is just taking any action and just like the whole world just watching us home.
Taliban forces entered the heart of the Afghan capital, Kabul, today, the culmination of a rapid advance and retaking of control almost exactly 2 decades after they were ousted from power.
The embassy shuttered, the flag coming down. Thousands of Afghans now scrambling to get out. The Kabul airport packed earlier today.
There have been chaotic scenes at Kabul airport as desperate Afghans tried to flee the country by hanging on to departing aircraft after the Taliban's final takeover yesterday.
A handful tragically clinging on even after takeoff before falling to their deaths.
Devastating reports emerging now from Kabul. This is what everybody feared. The suicide attack at Abbey Gate, where the race to evacuate US citizens and allies from Afghanistan is entering its final days.
I'm here to announce the completion of our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the end of the military mission to evacuate American citizens, third country nationals, and vulnerable Afghans. The last C-17 lifted off from Hamid Karzai International Airport on August 30th, this afternoon, at 3:29 p.m. East Coast time.
the situation here is very quiet now, and you can hear the horns of the military cars taken by the Taliban. And there are rumors on social media that they are going to settle down first and they will start to do their brutalities.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates in the long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. Give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it
since The Office and your big breakthrough with that series.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I wonder if that were to be launched today and seen for the first time today, how would it be received?
I think it would be received the same way, but there'd just be more complaints, because that's some people's job nowadays, is to complain and be heard and be offended and try to get things cancelled. And I think a lot of it is totally fake outrage, because they're shouting out of a window and they want someone to hear them. Some of it's stupidity, where they don't understand it. I mean, I think a lot of offence comes from people mistaking the subject of a joke with the actual target, you know, because, you know, you can't legislate against stupidity. But you have to ignore it, and you have to stick to your guns. And there's things that, you know, 15 years ago that were really right on and woke and ironic and, you know, ridiculing those things. But now people are taking them on face value, and they're ignoring the context, ignoring the satire, ignoring the irony. And they know full well that it came from a good place. But I think people just want to cause a ripple.
It's not all, always about what happens now either. It can be about what happened 20 years ago, as the author.
Oh, it's ludicrous. Kevin Hart did some tweets 10 years ago that he deleted and apologised for at the time. And then he lost his job as host for the Oscars because he wouldn't apologise again. And he's right, because if there's no value to saying sorry and moving on, well, you might as well not change. You might as well carry on. And I just think there's this punishment. People want blood. It's just about owning
that. It's always a life sentence, isn't it?
Yeah, it always comes back to haunt you. You can never, you know, saying sorry isn't enough.
I just wonder, which side of politics do you see as the biggest threat against the freedom of expression today? Is it the left side or the right side?
Well, there's no such thing as a side anymore. It's ridiculous, because it goes left and right, and then extreme left, extreme right, extreme left, extreme right. They come round and meet. Mm. It's extremism that's the problem, and Twitter amplifies that. If you're mildly conservative on Twitter, you're Hitler. You know, if you're mildly left-wing, you're Trotsky. And if you're a centrist, they both hate you and you're a coward. There is no nuance, there's no argument, you know? It's just... And it ups and ups and ups. I think that extremism is threatening everything. And people are liars, and they pretend it's because of what you're saying, but really they just don't want to hear it, because you're not on the right side. There's so much hypocrisy and lies, and the more you tell a lie, some people believe it. And that is like the new politics. Lie enough till people believe it and it becomes a truth.
I must protest. Last week, senior officers who work in this building issued a statement declaring they would not be investigating the unlawful Christmas party held in Downing Street last year. The statement claimed a criminal inquiry is not possible because there is, quote, an absence of evidence. Correct me if I'm wrong here, ma'am. The whole purpose of a police inquiry is to gather evidence. But because your officers are unwilling to get off their backsides and find it, my team are bringing that evidence direct to Scotland Yard. First, though, for the benefit of the Metropolitan Police, let's remind ourselves what the rules were in December 2020. The law stated no person may participate in a gathering in the Tier 3 area, which consists of two or more people and takes place in any indoor space. Government guidance was similarly clear. You must not have a work, Christmas, lunch, or party where that is primarily social activity. The day before the party, Scotland Yard shut down a wedding where 40 people were in attendance. The officers working in this building released a statement saying, quote, holding large gatherings could be the difference between life and death for someone else. London is in tier 3. You must not mix inside with anyone who is not in your household or support bubble. Indeed, we also know the Met are currently prosecuting people for allegedly holding a party in Ilford on December the 18th, 2020, the same night that number 10 staff and their guests knocked back wine and played party games until 2 a.m. Nobody denies an event took place at 10 Downing Street. The issue is a simple one. Was it, as number 10 claims, a work meeting? Or was it a party? Let's look at the evidence. It's now been established that invitations were sent out by the press team 3 weeks before the event and that invitees included people who don't work in Downing Street. The invitation said food and wine would be served and there would be an exchange of gifts. Some people wore Christmas jumpers to the event, while others brought secret Santa presents. According to one person who was there, you might call them a witness, quote, everyone was packed shoulder to shoulder. If it looks like a party, sounds like a party, stinks of booze and goes on to 2 a.m, it's an effing party. Now, I didn't float up the Lagan in a bubble, and neither did the British public. That is no work meeting. And of course, even Downing Street staff called the event a party. We know this because 4 days later, they held a mock press conference, footage of which has now been leaked, where they explicitly described it as a party, except that it would be controversial because it was held during lockdown and discussed ways to present it to the public as a business meeting. Of course, if Metropolitan Police officers are worried about an absence of evidence that a party took place, they would do well to remember that the numerous people not employed at number 10 who reportedly attended the party could only have gained access to it by coming to the gates of Downing Street and giving their names to a Metropolitan Police officer. But Scotland Yard is refusing to investigate. Why? When did we stop caring about truth and accountability? It's not a rhetorical question, ma'am. The police serve the public. We do so without fear or favour, and we do so to the letter of the law. The letter. Our leaders partied while families were separated and our citizens died in their thousands. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, led by the wee donkey. Who exactly does the Metropolitan Police work for, ma'am? Our citizens or Boris Johnson?
The government is taking the pee. Nice little private parties, lots of drink and lots of entertainment, and the rest of the country not allowed to do anything? Come on, guys. The liberties they understand are the liberties they take. Handing money to their mates, handing contracts to their mates, that's the liberties they're taking. The liberties I want are the liberties that we've all fought for and our ancestors have fought for. This government is taking away the very freedoms that our ancestors fought for. One, the police bill. It will criminalise protest. Protest is a basic right. That is how our democratic changes ever came about. The Chartists would have been imprisoned under this government. Those that campaigned for the right to vote, women, who were indeed imprisoned, would be prevented from even holding a demonstration under this bill. The Borders and Nationality Bill criminalises people who save life at sea. If you see a refugee drowning in the sea, or anybody drowning in the sea, what's your natural instinct? Help them. And it's actually, you're required to help them by the international law of the sea. What are you going to do? Imprison people for saving life because they happen to be refugees, people like you and me. The Home Secretary will be given powers to remove our passports if she believes that you have access to another nationality. So if your parents were born in, say, Pakistan or Bangladesh or Jamaica or Ghana or Nigeria or South Africa or Australia or Canada, anywhere in the world, the Home Secretary can remove your British nationality on the assumption that they would automatically get the nationality of the country of their parents' birth. There's nothing automatic about it. We live in strange times where people who profess to believe in the British way of life and the freedom of speech are doing the very opposite. They're curtailing the rights to roam, the right to travel, the right to speak, the right to demonstrate. These are dangerous times. Our liberties were won by protest. Think of the great stretch and breadth of our history. The Peasants' Revolt, the English Civil War, the Chartists and other movements in the 19th century, the protests in the 20th century have had an effect. Why do we have the right to roam in our countryside? Because of the mass trespass at Kendah Scout in 1932, the most effective protest ever. How was the poll tax finally ended? But by massive demonstrations against it. Demonstrations actually do make a difference. We can't applaud brave people demonstrating against oppressive regimes in other parts of the world if we curtail the very same freedoms that they are demanding in our own country. I've never seen anything on this scale before. I was in Parliament for most of Margaret Thatcher's tenure. And while her instincts were to prevent demonstration and curtail demonstration, the scale of oppression of liberties now is far greater. If we don't push back at these power grabs, and many people will say, well, actually, I don't like protest, I don't like the aggro, I don't like the problems that go with it. When somebody decides they want to build a bypass road through their house, want to expand an airport near where they live, and they find they've lost their right to protest, it's a bit late then. You have to defend the right to protest. Whether you agree with those protesting or not, it's a fundamental right. It's a democratic value. If we're just passive spectators and we see politics as a sport you just watch on television, well, then we're not participating. Democracy is not just about voting. It is about your right to speak, your right to demonstrate, your right to organise, your right to join a trade union, your right to lots of things. But democracy has to be defended, and that can only be defended by the active participation of our citizens. And what worries me is we've all become spectators. We sit at home watching our computers and deciding that's our participation. No, it's not. Let's get out there and be a bit more active. If you love this country and you love its people, then you should love the freedoms that go with it. The freedom of speech, the freedom to organise, the freedom to demonstrate. Patriotism isn't about flag waving. It's about supporting each other. It's being patriotic for each other. It's not patriotic to take rights away from people.
And I just want to say something about old conservatives, old conservative farts like me. We are conservative still. I'm a conservative. John Major is a conservative. Michael Heseltine is a conservative. I'm not sure that this is a conservative government. I think this is a sort of all over the place, rather chaotic English nationalist government. And that, I find, is deplorable and very difficult. And the, one of the big things which is going to face us in the next few years is, unless we're careful, we're going to see the breakup of the union because of this. I really fear at the moment that in order to try to win back support from the right, which is being lost because of the argument, which I think is fairly absurd, that taking tough measures against coronavirus is somehow illiberal and authoritarian, whereas the awful police and crime bill isn't. I do think that there's a danger that Boris will start to take decisions on things like the Northern Ireland Protocol in order to try to satisfy the Daily Telegraph right wing.
But this is how damaging it is, isn't it? If those principles are not being followed, then we have a problem. In years gone by, people would have resigned.
Yes. Oh, it inflicts reputational carnage on everybody involved in politics and on the House of Commons in particular. I think the significant difference between the John Major era and now is this. Yes, there was all sorts of wrongdoing during the latter stages of John Major's premiership, but nobody ever thought that John Major was a person of anything but unimpeachable integrity and straight dealing. Mm. Now, the person who is in charge of the ship is regarded as a serial dissembler as an habitual liar, as somebody who has made his career through ducking and dodging and diving and dissembling and deceiving people. That's the difference, and that is why it is so incredibly serious and enormously damaging. I'm sorry to say it, but I've known 12 prime ministers in my lifetime, and by a country mile, Boris Johnson is the worst. His natural instinct is not to be open, not to be transparent, not to be accountable, but narcissistically to think, what suits me? How can I extricate myself from this awkward situation? By what means can I arrogate blame somewhere else? This is way below the standard that the British public are entitled to expect. And when people say, well, isn't it important that we focus on the big issues rather than on wallpaper or the cost of a flat? I suppose the answer to that is this. If there isn't a basic level of trust in the most senior minister in the government, it's very difficult to operate a democratic polity at all. That's the problem. This guy stinks in the nostrils of decent people.
Took up knitting, some of us got out the sourdough. I found myself just scribbling these lines that turned into a poem, not just about the events we've been watching on our screens and at the press conferences, but actually reflecting what's been going on in every household.
But it's incredibly delicate territory, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Did you feel it was delicate, or did you let yourself go as you always do?
Well, it's a bit of both. You can't restrain yourself in terms of how passionate you are as you're writing. You know, I wanted to reflect the anger I think a lot of us felt as the thing progressed and as the same mistakes were being made in the winter that were made early on, the confusion, the not quite knowing what the rules were. I think the fear also of none of us really knowing how this is going to end. I wanted to reflect that, but I also wanted to reflect the kind of communal spirit, the fact that we wanted it to work.
How distant is the situation now from that that Malcolm Tucker has to deal with? Is Malcolm Tucker anywhere near the current
Prime Minister? It was fairly early on. I think it was when Matt Hancock promised to get tests up to 100,000 a week or a day, I can't remember. And then they published a picture of a whiteboard with three of them adding lots of figures up to get it over 100,000. And that reminded me of a bit of the thick of it, really, because it was all about how are we going to get the whiteboard and the numbers we have arbitrarily lying around to add up to this figure that I've said publicly. I think there were elements of that there.
But what are the controls now?
In politics?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing I worry deeply about, in that there are none. I mean, it's always been a factor of the way the British constitution works, which is a politician with a prime minister with a large majority in the House of Commons can do absolutely anything they like. If a channel displeases me, I'll talk about selling it off. You know, if an electoral commission keeps deciding against us, I'll put a cabinet minister in charge of it instead. You know, if we don't like certain people, we'll tell them not to protest, or we might strip their citizenship. These are big questions that I think 5 years ago even people would have been balking at.
I've been anchoring this programme for 30 years and I've found it harder and harder to hold politicians to account. How therefore is it for a writer who is trying to do more or less the same thing, except that the figures are fictional?
The footage that we saw earlier in the week, last week, of the press conference, Allegra Stratton's press conference, I think for me what was disturbing about that was that while they were trying to come up with an answer about how to explain the party, there was not one sense of guilt from any of them that what they were doing was discussing alternative lies to tell. You know, shall we say it was a drinks party? Shall we say it was a business meeting? There's no one saying, oh my God, you had a party.
Doesn't actually the whole question of the fact that they were caught having drinks or whatever it was on the terrace of number 10, doesn't it illustrate that they are perhaps human beings? And that actually, you know, even though they'd set the rules, they were human enough to need to have a drink.
Absolutely, yes. And I think, which takes me back to my point, why then is your instinct to lie about it than to say, we were knackered, it was a long day, you know, we shouldn't have done it. I know it looks bad, it's terrible, I'm really sorry.
And I urge you not to do it.
And I urge you not to do it. You know, that at least would have been a bit better than the denying what we see in front of us.
The Downing Street Christmas parties are outrageous. It's the Prime Minister laughing in our faces. But while we've all been focused on that, something much, much bigger than that has been slipped past us. The government is taking away our liberties on an industrial scale. You know those documentaries you've seen about a dictator's rise to power? And there's always a bit in the documentary where you think, why didn't they stop him? They could have stopped him when there was still time. That's the bit we're at. We currently have a bill going through its final stages of Parliament, the police bill, which now contains measures which would effectively shut down protest in this country. We'll be banned from locking on or indeed holding on to anything in pursuit of protest. One of the most important protest tactics around the world, used throughout history. You can't interfere in any way with the construction of any new major infrastructure. So you can't protest against a road being built, an airport being expanded. New stop and search powers, which the police will be able to deploy against anyone who they suspect might be carrying equipment for a protest, and indeed other powers where they can stop and search us without suspicion. But even worse than that is this power to ban named people from going to any kind of protest. You put them on a list, and those people are then banned from all engagement with protest, even from being able to go on the internet and talk about protest, anything like that, you'll be banned, even though you've committed no crime. Our basic democratic liberties are being taken away from us. So obviously, the media, the establishment, Parliament, they're all up in arms, they're in uproar over this. In your dreams, you could hear a pin drop. Almost no discussion at all of these massive dictators' powers. Parliament is almost silent on it. The Labour Party is almost silent on it. The press is censoring itself. We don't need that next stage towards autocracy where government censor the press because it's already happening. And what's very interesting about this is that we have a whole discourse of freedom on the right. We have all these freedom warriors like Julia Hartley Brewer and Lawrence Fox and Toby Young and Steve Baker and Oliver Dowden and Nadine Dorries, all these people who position themselves as being in favour of liberty. Not a squeak from any of them about these massive truncations of our freedoms. The only freedoms they care about are their own. It's not just the police bill which has been slipped past us while we've all been focusing elsewhere. It's also the nationality and borders bill, an unbelievably oppressive piece of legislation where it enables, on a whim, the government to take away your citizenship, to take away your passport. And this could apply to up to 5 million people, predominantly people of colour. It's enacted the fantasy which people like the British National Party and the National Front used to entertain decades ago. It's actually turned it into policy. And it's gone through with scarcely a scrap of coverage. Again and again now, the government is passing these massive, history-changing bills, and the media's looking elsewhere. How can this be? What's going on here? What is this hypnosis which we seem to be under? Media and government, government and media, the same figures go round and round. And they use all the skills and all the contacts which they accumulated as journalists and deploy that cleverness on behalf of their new political masters. Allegra Stratton is a classic example of this. She worked in newspapers and television before becoming the Prime Minister's spokesperson. She was the one who was caught laughing about that Christmas party and had to resign, basically the fall guy for Johnson, because the favourite Tory bloodsport is shooting the messenger. But she was indicative of this meshing of media and government. If the media exists for a purpose, it is to hold power to account. But the great majority of the media reinforces power. Boris Johnson is the most dangerous Prime Minister we've had in the entire democratic era. He creates this impression of being relaxed and funny and spontaneous and bumbling and incompetent. It's all calculated. And he disarms people with this impression of bumbling incompetence, but he's absolutely ruthless when it comes to the pursuit of power. And he senses weakness in our political system like a shark smells blood. And so he homes in and exploits that weakness to great effect. If there's one thing that the history of the past 100 years tells us, it is beware of the clowns. People who seem ridiculous are the most dangerous people of all in politics. We weren't sufficiently aware of the dangers of the clowns, and we elected one as Prime Minister. The whole thrust of unaccountable power is that you can do things that other people can't. You don't have to abide by the rules because you're powerful. You're above all that. It's the other people who do. And so we have this situation in this country where the Prime Minister and his cronies are mocking us. As we abide by the COVID rules, they just ignore them and laugh in our faces. And while they're doing so, they impose the most draconian legislation in living memory on the rest of us. This is how dictatorship works, and we are sliding towards it at the moment. The motive power of dictatorship is that there's one rule for the elite and a completely different rule for the people.
We're looking over our shoulder at Omicron, and we have Delta staring us right in the face.
A lot of people are saying that it feels like March 2020 all over again. But people, please have some optimism. Things are much better now than they were back then.
I think 2022 is going to be a much better year than people are expecting.
Hopefully we'll get better in 2022.
I hope it gets better in 2022.
And a happy new year. Let's hope 2022 is a better year for all of us. Thanks so much for joining.
Stephen Ritson. In pieces.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again because a vision softly creeping left its scenes while I was sleeping. In my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo. I turn my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs and voices never shared. And no one dared disturb the sound.
Listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit TRE.radio.